Special Committee on Energy, calling to order at 10:20 p.m. This is a.m., excuse me. Co-Chair Culver, members present, Co-Chair Vasquez, excuse me, Representative Tilton, Representative Tallarico. And our business today, we're going to have Representative Wilson present her committee substitute for House Bill 78, version N. It's a much leaner version of the bill. And if time allows, we will have a presentation on forming a rail belt transmission company. So with that, there's no objection. We'll take up that that item of business and invite Representative Wilson to roll out this proposed CS to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 3 North Pole. As you can see, it is a much leaner bill. Put it on a diet. Hopefully this will be much easier. I want to let you know also, Mr. Chair, that we sent this out to everyone for their information, for their feedback. There was a letter obviously received from Chugach today, which we are working with the RCA, and that's why you see a leaner bill. So I'm just going to go over why it is so much leaner and what it does. Three things primarily. First of all, it makes it so that an independent power producer will know what the costs are to generate the electricity, so they can see whether they can compete or not, and they could request from the RCA on how they came up, the utility came up with those costs. Part two talks about transmission. What is it going to cost to go through the transmission lines? As you will recall, a few weeks ago, we talked about Fire Island, that once they got up through all the different lines, it actually turned out to be more expensive than the electricity that we're currently generating in Fairbanks. So you need to know those costs before an IPP, independent power producer, could go to the bank and get financing. So once we know those two costs, then it comes to where the utility comes in, and they can now have a discussion, Mr. Chair, on whether or not they want to buy the power. If, for some reason, that the utility just says, I don't want to play in the game, the last resort that the IPP has is to be able to then go to the RCA and be able to show that what they're offering does not in any fashion destroy or provide a higher cost to the utility users. And what we hope to do is, as this bill moves along, Mr. Chair, is as the RCA continues down their docket and other information, it will become leaner and leaner, and perhaps as we go through it, you know, not just this year's process, but next year's process, it could be that with what you're doing today as well, may come up with the information that we've all been wanting to do. I again want to remind that most of this can already be done. It's just been our experience thus far that some don't want to play in the sandbox together, and I think at this point this is helping get the discussion going and in a positive way. So with that, I do appreciate and we'll take any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you, Representative Wilson. Could you maybe just kind of walk us through, and if you could, and then walk us through section by section, and then tell us what you took out after we did that.
Can I have a sectional analysis for you? Section 1, the title, we didn't change. So that was the easy part. Section 2, new section, this creates a new section to implement requirements applicable to electric utilities with respect to qualifying facilities, small renewable energy and cogeneration facilities, as required under federal statutes and regulations. Subsection A requires electric utilities to comply with FERC rules relating to purchasing power from qualifying facilities and other related obligations. Subsection B exempts qualifying facilities from certain state laws and regulations as required under federal law. Subsection C authorizes the RCA to issue orders requiring electric utilities to comply with their obligations under this section. Subsection D limits the applicability of this section to electric utilities that are subject to the RCA rate-making authority. This language is drawn directly from the federal statute. Subsection E1 defines avoided cost according to federal law. Subsection E2 defines qualifying facility by referring to the definitions and criteria for a qualifying facility specified in federal law. What this does, it changed from the last one, is there was a lot more required from the utilities, and we heard from the utilities that this would cost them a lot of money. We found since then, when it came to avoided cost, a lot of it was reported quarterly as part of the RCA process. Now, only upon request would they have to provide it. So it's a much friendlier version to the utilities. Section 3, new subsection D through F, this section ensures open access to electric transmission facilities as provided on a fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory basis. Except as noted, the language below is modeled on federal law. Subsection D requires electric utilities to establish joint use, interconnection, and transmission service within a reasonable time after receiving requests to do so and for reasonable compensation where there will be no undue burden on the utility, consistency with the public interest, and no impairment of service to consumers. Subsection E confirms the electric utility may recover from connecting entities their cost incurred in providing for joint use, interconnection, and transmission service, while at the same time ensuring that the charges it imposes on connecting entities are fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory. Subsection F1 defines reasonable compensation to help ensure that charges imposed by electric utilities for joint use, interconnection, and transmission service are fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory. And subsection F2 through 3 define the terms transmission and distribution to avoid confusion. Transmission is defined to involve carrying bulk electricity as 69 kilovolts or greater from generation sources to distribution lines, while distribution is defined to involve carrying electricity at less than 69 kilovolts from transmission lines to retail customers. The language is modeled on FERC's definitions for transmission and distribution. The 69 kilovolt voltage threshold has been used to define transmission as distinct from distribution in expert analysis in the Alaska Rail Belt Transmission System. It also puts the studies on the backs of the IPP versus the utilities. Again, the utilities, we're talking about making sure their customers are taken care of first. We completely understand that, and if someone wants to connect, more responsibility should be put on them. And lastly, Mr. Chair, Section 4, Amendment to AS4205321. Alaska law tends to use the terms joint use and interconnection when discussing open access to transmission facilities, while federal law tends to use the term transmission services. And these terms and other similar terms are used somewhat interchangeably in both federal and state law. This section revises existing law to improve consistency and to make it clear that the RCA's oversight authority encompasses joint use, interconnection, and transmission service. We work very closely with the RCA on the issues that they were currently doing, Mr. Chair. We took a lot of those sections out. We want to make this so that it goes a little bit closer to federal law, because a few years ago that we were talking more about security. Alaska talks about that not as much as they probably should, as far as being able to have our services here. PURPO, you heard about, was one of those avenues to make sure that we're producing as much electricity on our own and being less impacted by, for instance, Fairbanks still has a lot of their services using oil instead of wind and hydro, those things that we have a lot more control over. So these are kind of the things that are necessary at this point so that we can get more generation and lower the cost for all of Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. So the thrust of this legislation is to kind of use PURPA as a model for implementing joint use and provisions for buying power from independent power producers?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. It's worked it, we're just modeling off what's worked for the lower 48.
Okay. And what so you dealt with that avoided cost issue. How could you explain that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Basically, unavoided cost is that currently it's just given as an average. And what we've asked for it to be broken down so that, and again, I'll use GVA as an example, they generate from coal, they generate from oil, they generate from wind. They have all sorts of ways that they generate power. I need to, you know, if I'm an IPP, I need to know what those are so that I can say, okay, so oil, it's costing you 24 cents a kilowatt hour. I can offer this for 10 cents a kilowatt hour. So that's the first measurement that I have as an independent power producer. And the second part is, what's it going to cost me transmission? Because I need to pay for it as an IPP. There's nothing for free. I can now add that in, and let's say I'm at 15 cents a kilowatt hour. Now I'm lower than the 24 cents. I can offer it to you for 15 cents. Now we're going to sit down and negotiate it together to figure out what I can offer, what term I can do, and make sure that it follows all the other rules the RCA says, as far as I have room on the line for the utility. It's not going to disrupt them in any kind of fashion.
Okay. Members of the committee, any questions for the sponsor? Madam Co-Chair?
Wilson, as you well know, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska has an open docket, and specifically addressing an independent system operator for the rail belt transmission system, docket I/15/001. How, and also there's another docket, docket R-13-002. How do you see those affecting this legislation?
Madam Co-Chair, through the chair, depending upon how those go and possibly even the presentation on the ISO or Transco, I think that takes care of the transmission issue that we have in the bill currently, and I will be very pleased if we go forward with that, taking those out of the bill, and then just only continuing with those aspects so that we can get more affordable energy.
Yes.
And for the record, I know the Regulatory Commission of Alaska has been charged with getting a study done on those issues, which will be due, I believe, the end of June of this year, 2015. Is that correct? Is that your understanding, Representative Wilson?
Madam Co-Chair, yes, that is my understanding.
Okay. I think for the committee, I would point out that this is not simply a open access or what we were working on, transmission co-op or an independent system operator, but a way to have the commission weigh in areas where they're not part of the rail belt grid, where we're not going to look at an independent system operator, where we're not going to have a transmission co-op. So there would be a framework to have the RCA review and provide oversight for joint use of transmission facilities and oversee power purchase agreements?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And, you know, we are so lucky in Alaska. We are so rich in energy. And to think that it's stifled because we do have a small population, this also can open it up to where maybe we can go through Canada and sell our power that way, have a whole different economy that we currently don't have, because we have so many resources that we want to take care of our people first and lower our cost here. But if we can then sell the excess, just like we're talking about gas, that will definitely lower for everyone. I just want to remind the committee, change is always hard. You know, everybody's had to fight this fight at some point. And, you know, I want to just thank you at this point. I know we came with a really big bill, and to keep sending me back was frustrating, but I have learned so much from it, and I think we have a better product because of it, and I think it also helps the RCA know that we want to see these changes in some type of avenue, and that's why we're willing to keep making the changes as we go along.
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Wilson, do you know if the Association of Independent Power Producers are submitting comments to the active RCA, or Regulatory Commission of Alaska, dockets, the dockets I just mentioned a few minutes ago?
Representative Co-Chair Vasquez, through the chair, yes, it is my understanding that they are.
Excellent.
And they have also had discussions with them.
And I've also, for the record, have been informed that the Alaska Power Association is still reviewing the bill, the CS bill that you're just discussing, just so that you know, for the record.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson, could you kind of address how this approach in the CS differs from the docket previously referenced before the regulatory RCA. The docket opened on February 27th, operation regulation of the Alaska Rail Belt Electric Transmission System, docket I-15-001.
Mr. Chair, I think there are still some similarities to it, and until it actually gets adopted, we want to make sure that it's still in the bill. Once it passes the docket in whatever the final form is, then we will again go back to the RCA with our bill and take out anything that's not necessary. But right now, it's just in the beginning process of it. What I'm trying to make sure the bill does at this point is to allow fair play so that those who are wanting to invest and keep programs going, we in fact have legislation that would become for finance looking for ADA for another power producer to be able to do it. But if they are unable to connect into the lines, nobody's going to invest in Alaska, and that's what we really want, is we want the millions of dollars we've seen in other areas being invested right here.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Madam Chair, go ahead.
Just for the record, we appreciate the efforts made in this CS bill, and we appreciate the efforts that the RCA is doing, and we look forward to looking. The co-chair and myself had discussed working during the interim on these issues and making sure that we move this ball. So we really appreciate this input from the independent power producers. We think there's value in this, but there's also value in waiting for an important stakeholder like the RCA to finish up what they need to do, and we can look at the whole picture. We're getting part of the picture here, which is good, but we also need the other moving parts to make a definitive decision, and we're committed to doing that. We do see lots of changes that need to be made in the rail belt, including the transmission system and how IPPs participate.
Madam Co-Chair, through the Chair, and I do appreciate that, but I want to remind the committee that, you know, this bill came to energy because of the statewide energy plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to Labor and Commerce because of the RCA issues that are within this, so for it to be vetted through there, and then it will go through finance because at this point we don't know what fiscal note there is. I do appreciate it. We are hoping that it gets out of the Energy Committee so that it can go to the next issues that it needs to do, because we are committed to not just for this year but for next year working through this, and in our hopes that the utilities will realize that change isn't necessarily bad, but it's actually good for everyone, including their customers.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Tallarico.
Just a point of clarification. Are we going to adopt this as our working draft?
Not today.
Not today?
No.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would hope you would at least adopt it for your working draft, is not to pass it out, but so that it can be out there on basis as the current draft that everybody will be commenting on. Otherwise, they'll be commenting on the bigger, larger one that we no longer
have. All right. We'll consider that. Thank you.
Yes.
Representative Tallarico, want to move it as a working draft?
I certainly can, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move that we adopt as our working draft the CS for House Bill number 78, number 29-LS0259/N, dated 3/18/15.
Okay. I'll object for the purpose of discussion, and with that, we'll hold the bill aside.
Yeah.
And do we need to have it adopted as our CS, as our working draft? Okay.
Can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
Comment on that.
Yeah.
I think with the work that Representative Wilson has put into this and the effort put forward, I'd like to see us adopt it as the working draft so that we can utilize it from this point forward to work off of it.
Okay. Is there an objection then to adopting as a working document?
For discussion and consideration.
Yeah, well we're not going to.
Wait, you're not passing out.
Yeah, I remove my objection, and so if there's no other objection, we will adopt this as our working document and set the bill aside. We're going to have a few minutes on our next presentation, and so then we'll continue to work on this, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to let you know we have sent it out to all the utilities and to all the parties who have testified, and we will continue to work with them as well as the RCA. Thank you.
And thank you for your efforts in this.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
For the record, Co-Chair Representative Vasquez will now chair the rest of the presentation before the committee. And the presentation will be, it's quote, forming a rail belt transmission company, a presentation by the ATC, American Transmission Company. Mr. Myers, welcome. For the record, it is 10:40. You may start your presentation. For the record, state your name and affiliation and your title.
Thank you, Co-Chair Vasquez. My name is Eric Myers, and I'm manager of business development for the American Transmission Company. And thank you for inviting me here today, Co-Chair Culver, members Telrico and Tilton. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to talk a little bit about the how. We've talked much this morning and in previous meetings about what needs to change in the way transmission is built and operated in the rail belt, and what I bring today is a business model for organizing the utilities in the rail belt to make operational decisions and future investments in transmission in Alaska's rail belt. So today I'd like to tell you a little bit about American Transmission Company, because the model we're proposing is one that we've successfully implemented in Wisconsin, and then leave some time for questions about how this model could work in the rail belt area. And I'm having difficulty advancing the slide. American Transmission Company is the first multi-state standalone transmission utility in the United States, and our customer owners include 28 separate companies that include investor-owned utilities, municipal utilities, and cooperatives. We grew from $550 million in transmission assets in 2001 to over $3.3 billion in transmission assets today. And that's about 9,500 miles of transmission, more than 500 substations. So we're a large transmission-only utility. All we do is transmission. We don't own any generation. And we serve the companies who serve the end customers. And that's just a list of the companies that own us and are our member owners. So why did we organize this way? Well, the price of electricity in Wisconsin was higher than the price of electricity in neighboring states, and there was a large difference between the cost of electricity to consumers in one part of the state compared to the other. And that second part is very similar to the situation that the rail belt faces. The cost of electricity produced at Bradley Lake on the Kenai is more expensive than the price of electricity paid by consumers in Fairbanks, for instance. And transmission can be part of the solution to evening out those costs. In our experience, since 2005, we've seen a dramatic reduction in the difference between the cost of electricity for consumers in our area and that which is paid by our neighboring regions. And so that's why we made these transmission investments, and that's why integrating the operation of transmission is so important. So how do we make these steps forward? How do we make this progress? Integrating transmission under a single operating company allows that company to maintain and improve the network for reliability, to facilitate economic dispatch, that is making sure that the most economic generators are the ones that the customers are seeing, and to interconnect new generators, like new power plants built by utilities, but also independent power producers on a level playing field through an open access, non-discriminatory tariff. And that basically says that there's one cost of transmission and everyone pays the same cost. It also allows utilities and consumers to react to changes in public policy. So if there's a desire to pursue renewable energy, or if there's a need to accommodate new Clean Air Act requirements, the network is much more flexible when it's knitted well together. It allows the transmission planning process to evaluate and communicate the multiple benefits of new infrastructure. So if a power line provides benefits of lower cost electricity to consumers from region to region, you can calculate those benefits before making the investment. If the benefits aren't there, you don't make the investment, and that ensures that the consumer's pocketbook is protected as new capital investments are made. And finally, operating the network as it's intended, as one integrated whole, allows for more efficient approaches to reliability. So what have we learned in our we've been talking with stakeholders in Alaska for a little over a year. We think we've learned quite a bit about how the network works in Alaska and in the rail belt. It's been a history of collaboration and conflict, and this conflict is natural. the utilities that have built transmission in the rail belt have done so to meet their local needs. And so those local needs are not always compatible from region to region. So as the transmission assets are used to wheel power from one area to the other, the impact on the company who built the line and whose customers are responsible for paying for that line can change. And so those changes can create conflict. There are substantial opportunities for improvements to reliability and to the economic dispatch, or making sure that the least cost alternative among the generators is utilized for the consumer's benefit. And we think a successful solution will combine an integration of the operation of existing assets, so putting all of the transmission assets under one corporate structure, under one company. This will improve access to capital by inviting in private capital in addition to the existing sources of capital, implement a tariff to allocate the costs of paying for all this transmission infrastructure to all the users of the network, and then effective governance for making decisions about which investments to make next, to adopt reliability standards that are consistent across the network, to have a common standard for interconnecting new generators, and for and to allow the network to be operated for the reliability of the entire grid. So what have we done so far? ATC has worked with the Railbelt utilities to adopt a common set of guiding principles that have been signed off on by all the general managers in the Railbelt. We've established the staff working group with the utilities to refine the analysis of what it will cost to implement this solution and also the benefits of implementing the solution for Railbelt consumers. We're communicating with other Railbelt stakeholders, including independent power producers, labor, other interested parties to this change. As Representative Wilson mentioned before, change is always difficult, and part of getting through that change is communicating its impacts to everyone who's affected. And finally, and this goes hand in glove with communication, but building understanding and trust, because anytime you're going through change, you want to trust those that you're going through that change with. And that's an important part. And so we spend a lot of time communicating one-on-one with the parties rather than through a broadcast medium, because we think it's important to have that healthy dialogue. And on our experience, it works. A singular focus on transmission allows the Transco to plan effectively, to build the network, operate efficiently, and respond to changing customer conditions. And this is all in the service of the end customer, providing the least cost option for electricity. And Representative Vasquez asked me to prepare a diagram that shows how the Transco works in partnership with the RCA and with another entity that's been talked a lot about, and that's the ISO or USO. And so these three circles and the associated benefits that are captured in each one of them shows what each party does. And so on the left in the green circle is the Transco. And so it's responsible for owning, operating, planning, and constructing the existing and future transmission assets. It's regulated by the RCA, and so it charges customers rates that come under an RCA tariff. And the tariff allows for input by the ISO and USO. So the independent system operator or unified system operator is responsible for establishing and maintaining the reliability standards and the interconnection standards and the planning standards by which the Transco deploys capital. Because, you know, so the Transco follows the rules set by the ISO or USO, and in doing so ensures recovery under its tariff. So the tariff it's an RCA tariff that references the standards set by the ISO or USO, and the Transco is the executor. The Transco is the business that does the work. So hopefully that clarifies a little bit how these parties play together. And with that, I guess I'll open it up to questions, because I think you might have some questions about this diagram or about other things that I've said this morning. And thank you very much for the questions I get today and any that you submit later on.
Mr. Myers, for the record, this particular slide is not numbered and is not contained in the packet that was distributed. I don't have it in my set of slides.
Okay, well, we'll make sure that an updated version is printed and provided for the record.
Please, thank you, because this is really important, how the transmission service interacts with the independence ISO and the Regulatory Commission. And as you can see, for the record, the Regulatory Commission does affect the Transco and the ISO. I mean, they're two different identities. So the RCA is a major stakeholder. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And tell us, what would be the composition, the possibilities of an ISO? How would that be composed, or at least the range of possibilities? There's different ways you can set those up, but in your experience.
Representative Vasquez, through the chair, certainly the scope of the ISO or the USO is right in the crosshairs of the informational docket that the RCA has composed and is pursuing today. There will be parties submitting comments to that informational docket, I believe, closing today, and a series of workshops will be hosted by the RCA to further flesh this out. But at a minimum, from the standpoint of the transmission-only utility, it is very important that the standards by which we pursue reliability and through which we help facilitate economic dispatch are set separately from the operating company and provide an opportunity for stakeholders to feed into what those standards are. Because once the transmission company starts building a line, the question of whether or not it benefits stakeholders needs to have already been answered. Once you start building something, it's a little late to talk about whether it's a good idea. And so the ISO-USO, by incorporating stakeholder feedback into the reliability standards and the planning protocols, ensures that any plans that are approved by the RCA or submitted by the Transco have that stakeholder feedback and are valid.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions? Because I'd like to proceed with some other questions. Co-Chair Colbert. Representative Colbert.
Is there model legislation that perhaps you could, a regulatory framework that we could bring in and adopt as, we've already done this, but you have PURPA there and we don't have PURPA, and then maybe there's some distinction between how you would implement here in Alaska versus in the lower 48 states. Mm-hmm.
Representative Culver, we believe that the RCA's informational docket will help define any deficiencies in their existing regulatory scope that would prevent a business model like this from receiving a certificate of public need or convenience in Alaska. If there is no limitation to the RCA's existing regulatory authority, then we think a model like this could proceed without any new legislation. But certainly that's the scope of the investigation that you've charged the RCA with doing this year.
Follow-up?
Sure. Representative.
What would be the process to... if there's several different entities looking to be the Transco, and I suppose there has been in your area, how are they vetted as far as receiving that certificate of need to serve that utility district that would be created from a Transco?
Representative Culver, the certificate for CPCN process, or Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity yeah. process, does allow for competing models to be evaluated through the regulatory process and allows the commission to select the one that best benefits all consumers. So that is one way that competing alternatives could be pursued. Certainly, any alternative that had the support of the Rail Belt utilities would have an advantage in that regard.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Myers? We have used the acronym ISO, and that stands for Independent System Operator. I see another acronym here. That's the USO. Can you explain what that acronym is for the record?
The USO is an acronym that has been put forth by one of the proponents of this bottom red circle, I guess I would say. And so it's the word uniform. And it is just another statement of the same idea.
Okay. Why would a Transco want the participation of an ISO, independent system operator?
Representative Vasquez, through the chair, the purpose in our experience of an independent body like the ISO or USO is to ensure that stakeholders understand the principles being applied when the Transco develops new transmission infrastructure. The Transco is trying to balance the multiple needs of all users of the network, and having a rule set that has been vetted by other stakeholders and is maintained by a separate independent organization is important to make sure that those investments are valid and accepted by the stakeholders. So we don't write our own rules. A separate organization writes the rules. We follow them.
Well, it also provides cover for you, for your organization, for Transco, that is, because you can say, well, the ISO charged us to do A, B, and C. It's not just our self-interest involved, right? Is that correct?
Absolutely. The ISO becomes an aggregator of the community's interest in transmission and helps communicate that interest to the Transco.
Okay. And would utilities be on the board of the ISO?
Representative Vasquez, directly responding from our own experience, we formed a Transco in Wisconsin and neighboring states through asset contributions. So the companies who owned the transmission lines when we were formed contributed their assets and, as a result, participate in the governance of American Transmission Company. They are the owner customers of the Transco. It's very similar to the relationship that cooperative members have to their companies. They own us and they participate in our governance. We also have independent governors on our board that help make sure that the overall interest of transmission is served and that we're not narrowly serving any the interest of any one owner.
Madam Chair?
Oh, yes. Representative Clayman. For the record, Representative Clayman has joined us.
I apologize for being late. The on the you described the Wisconsin experience with a transmission company that was owned by the people that had owned the utilities before, and we have the concept of an ISO and a USO. Regardless of what label gets put on it, at least from what I've been learning on this committee and other places, the real question is not what label do you call it, an ISO or a USO, but more kind of who has the majority power on the board of directors of that transmission company. If it's the majority is the utility owners or the prior transmission line owners, that looks slightly different than if it's non-utility owners or non-transmission prior transmission companies. But isn't that more a question, really isn't whether we call it an ISO or a USO, but more just if we created one, how do you populate the board of directors in terms of how much do utility interests have versus how much the non-utility owner, consumers, if you will, or others? Isn't that really the major distinction between the two, or am I missing something?
Representative Clayman, through the chair, the constitution of the board for the ISO or USO, as it's been proposed in Alaska, I believe is intended to be a stakeholder-driven board. The interests of the ISO or USO are the efficient and effective use of transmission and generation assets in the rail belt. And so its constitution needs to reflect those interests. As for the board of directors of the Transco, the most important element in that governance structure is that the Transco is given the ability to pursue transmission independent of any decisions made about distribution or generation assets. So it is a very narrow focus under a tariff that allows it to recover costs for transmission on a non-discriminatory basis. So it advantages no single generator. In our experience, we composed the board of directors of our company of a mix of the owners that contributed assets to our formation and some independent board members so that we had the breadth of experience and the independence to make those transmission-only decisions.
Okay, excuse me, Representative Clayman, there is a majority caucus that is going to be held in a minute, so those committee members that wish to leave us now can do so. And I'll stay a few more minutes, but then we'll have to end the meeting, but everyone is welcome to stay and ask questions of Mr. Myers. And Mr. Myers, you can touch base with my office later on or Co-Chair Colvert's office later on.
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative Vasquez. Sure.
Thank you, and I'm sorry of this time of at this time the session gets very hectic and we have meeting schedule, you know, without notice.
I completely understand.
Thank you. For the record, Representative Adam Bull has joined us.
Madam Chair, I have one follow-up.
Go ahead, Representative Clayman.
So the question is, on that board, right, who has, does the those that contribute assets have the majority, or are they a minority in the total numbers on the board? That, to me, is kind of the operative question. I think under various discussions, there's always some people that broadly spoke described in the electrical or the energy business and others that are not, but the question becomes who has the majority in the board, and that was my question for your company.
So in ATC's business model, as an operating company, the Transco's board, the majority on that board are asset owners. As for the shares they vote, currently the owners of ATC vote one company, one vote in that process. The board seats vote one company, one vote. There are also a balancing number of independent directors on that board, and then the chief executive officer of our company also has a separate vote, and he is not affiliated with any of those underlying parties. The governing body for the ISO or USO is something that I believe is being fleshed out right now, and it's intended to be stakeholder driven.
Representative Wool, we will not have time. I apologize. You can stay and ask Mr. Myers questions, but we will end the Energy Committee. It is, for the record, I believe, 1 minute past 11. We will adjourn until Thursday, April 2nd at 10:15.